All right, let's dive right in to the ACCA-FR exam.
No time to waste, right?
Exactly. We know you're probably just getting started with your prep.
Feeling a little overwhelmed, maybe?
Maybe a lot. So we're going to skip the fluff and get straight to the good stuff.
The stuff that can actually make a difference come exam day.
Think of this like getting insider tips from those who've climbed the mountain before.
Exactly. We've been poring over the examiner report.
Which are like gold, right?
Pure gold. They tell you what examiners are looking for.
And just as importantly, what trips people up.
So you can learn from those mistakes and avoid making them yourself.
Exactly. So before we get into the nitty-gritty.
The really juicy bit.
Let's quickly recap the structure of the exam itself.
Right, because it's changed a bit over the years.
It's all computer-based now, right?
Yeah, all on computer. Three sections.
Three sections. Okay, so walk us through those.
So you'll start with Section A, which is objective test questions.
Okay, so multiple choice.
Yeah, multiple choice, testing you on various topics across the syllabus.
All right, broad overview.
Right, then you move on to Section B, which is more about application.
Okay, so how does that differ from Section A?
Well, in Section B, you'll still have objective test questions.
Okay.
But they'll be within many case studies.
Ah, so it's not just about knowing the rule, but also how to apply it.
Exactly. It's testing your understanding at a deeper level.
Got it. And then, of course, there's the dreaded Section C.
The big one.
Constructed response questions.
Yep. This is where you really get to showcase your knowledge.
More in-depth analysis, right?
Absolutely. Longer scenarios, more complex calculations.
And more room for creative interpretation.
Well, creative within the boundaries of the accounting standards, of course.
Of course. So three different sections, three different challenges.
But all building on a solid foundation of understanding the core concepts.
Okay, so that's the structure. Now let's dig into those examiner reports.
Where the real learning begins.
Let's start with something that seems to trip a lot of people up. IFRS 16 leases.
Ah, yes. IFRS 16, the lease standard that keeps on giving.
What's the common pitfall here?
One of the biggest ones we see is handling those lease payments made in advance.
Okay, so you're talking about those upfront payments.
Exactly. Like when you lease a fancy office and have to pay a big chunk of cash before you even move in.
Makes sense.
Mm.
So what's the catch?
The key is remembering to deduct those advance payments from the opening lease liability.
Before you do anything else.
Exactly, before you calculate those finance costs.
So it's all about timing.
Precisely. Those advance payments reduce the liability, which in turn affects the finance cost calculation.
Okay, so a seemingly small detail can have a big impact on the numbers.
Absolutely. It's about understanding the logic behind the calculations.
And not just blindly plugging numbers into a formula.
Exactly. IFRS 16 is all about applying those principles to real-world scenarios.
All right, so lease payments in advance check. What about revenue recognition under IFRS 15? That's another area where people seem to get stuck.
Oh, IFRS 15, it can be a bit of a head scratcher.
What makes it so tricky?
Well, recognizing revenue isn't always as simple as it seems.
You mean it's not just about getting the cash in the bank?
Right. It's about identifying at the point at which control of the goods or services actually transfers to the customer.
Ah, so it's more nuanced than just the exchange of money.
Exactly. And the examiner report highlights this with an example of a company selling ovens to retailers.
Ovens, huh?
Yeah, ovens. They're a hot commodity in accounting exams, apparently.
So what was the issue with these ovens?
Well, a lot of students stumbled on recognizing revenue at the point of delivery.
Which seems logical, right? You hand over the oven, you recognize the revenue.
Well, not always. You have to consider things like the terms of the sale.
Okay, like what?
Well, imagine if the oven company imposes a huge penalty on retailers for returning ovens.
Even if the ovens are in perfect condition.
Even then, does the retailer really have full control if they face a massive financial hit for sending back perfectly good ovens?
Good point. So you have to look beyond the surface.
Exactly. It's about understanding who's really bearing the risks and rewards of ownership.
So it's not just a physical handover.
No, it's about the substance of the transaction, the economic reality.
IFRS 15 substance over form.
You got it.
All right, I think we're starting to get the hang of this.
I think so too. Ready to tackle another tricky standard.
Let's do it. What's next on the agenda?
How about IFRS 3 business combinations?
Oh, yes. Those can be a bit daunting.
They can be, but they don't have to be. The examiner report highlighted a common mistake in calculating the consideration for a share exchange.
Okay, so break that down for us.
Imagine a company, let's call them TechCo, acquiring a chunk of another company, InnovateCo, by giving them shares.
So instead of paying cash, they're paying with their own stock.
Exactly. And the key here is to focus on the group shareholding.
Meaning?
Meaning, if TechCo acquires 60% of InnovateCo, your calculations should revolve around that 60%.
Not the total share capital of InnovateCo.
Nope. It's all about the proportion they actually own, not the entire pie.
Got it. So it's about understanding ownership, not just the total value.
Precisely. And another thing to watch out for in these share exchanges is those discount factors.
Ah, yes, the time value of money.
Exactly. Let's say TechCo promises to pay some cash to InnovateCo down the line as part of the deal.
Okay.
You can't just treat that future cash flow the same as cash in hand.
Right, because a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow.
Exactly. So you need to discount those future payments to their present value.
To reflect their true worth today.
Precisely. It's all about comparing apples to apples, so to speak.
So, two key takeaways for share exchanges. Focus on the relevant ownership portion and bring those future payments back to the present using discount factors.
You nailed it.
Okay. Feeling pretty good about IFRS 3 now.
Me too. Ready to tackle another one.
Hit me with it.
All right. How about IAS 2 inventories?
Oh, inventory. That's a classic.
It is. And a common area of confusion is valuing work in progress, or WIP.
Ah, WIP, the inventory that's still in the making.
Exactly. And the key principle here is valuing it at the lower of cost and net realizable value.
Okay. That sounds familiar.
It's a fundamental accounting principle, but it gets a bit tricky with WIP.
How so?
Well, with WIP, cost only refers to what's been incurred so far.
Not the total cost of the finished good.
Exactly. Think of it like baking a cake.
I love a good analogy.
You wouldn't include the cost of the frosting if the cake's still in the oven, right?
Right. So with WIP, we're essentially freezing the cost at its current state of completion.
You got it. And then there's net realizable value, which is about looking into the future.
How so?
Well, net realizable value considers the estimated selling price of the finished good.
Okay.
Minus any costs to complete and sell it.
So it's like peeking into the future of that WIP and seeing what it's ultimately worth.
Precisely. And you compare that to the cost incurred so far to make sure you're not overvaluing the WIP.
So it's a balancing act between what's been invested and what it can realistically fetch in the market.
You nailed it. It's all about making sure those financial statements are giving a true and fair view.
All right. So WIP valuation check. We've covered quite a bit of ground already.
We have. And we're just getting started.
Before we move on to the big one, IFRS 9 financial instruments, let's take a quick breather.
A chance for everyone to digest all this valuable information.
And come back refreshed and ready to tackle the next challenge.
Okay, ready to tackle the beast?
IFRS 9. Bring it on.
All right, let's do this. IFRS 9 financial instruments.
The one that everyone dreads.
But it's not as scary as it seems.
That's what we're here to find out. The examiner reports definitely highlight some areas of concern.
Yeah, let's take the Dunxco case, for instance.
Dunxco?
Remember, they expanded into a new territory using a different currency.
The bread.
Yes, the bread. And a lot of students got tripped up on the exchange rates.
Ah, foreign currency transactions, always a fun one.
The key is knowing which rate to use for what.
Okay, so walk us through that.
For income and expenses, you generally use the spot rate at the transaction date.
Or an average rate for the period.
Exactly. But for balance sheet items, it's the closing rate at the reporting date.
So different rates for different things.
Precisely. It's all about reflecting the economic reality of the transaction.
Makes sense. What else should people watch out for with IFRS 9?
Well, another big one is correctly classifying financial instruments.
Like what?
Well, Dunxco issued redeemable preference shares.
Okay.
And many students incorrectly classified them as equity, liability, because of that mandatory redemption feature.
Ah, they have to buy back those shares at some point.
Exactly. That creates a liability.
An obligation to pay out in the future.
Precisely. So those shares need to be treated as a liability, not equity.
Got it. So it's not just about the name, but the substance of the agreement.
Exactly. Substance over form, always.
All right, what about those convertible loan notes?
Uh-huh.
Those always seem to cause confusion.
Ah, yes, compound instruments. The challenge is separating the debt and equity components.
How do you do that?
You have to discount future cash flows using an interest rate for similar notes, but without the conversion option.
Okay, so you're essentially isolating the debt portion.
Exactly. And then the equity portion is the difference between the proceeds and that discounted liability value.
So you're kind of separating the cookie dough from the chocolate chips.
I like that analogy. You're getting it.
What else tripped people up in the Dunxco case?
Well, they issued those preference shares partway through the year.
Okay.
And many students forgot to time apportion those finance costs.
Ah, right, because those costs only relate to a portion of the year.
Exactly. Timing is everything.
It's like paying rent. You only pay for the time you actually use the apartment.
Precisely. The same principle applies to finance costs.
So don't forget about time apportionment.
Absolutely. Now, before we move on from IFRS 9, let's touch on transaction costs.
Okay, those can be tricky.
They can be. Remember, for financial liabilities classified as amortized cost, you deduct those transaction costs from the proceeds.
So it affects the initial recognition of liability.
Precisely. Those costs reduce the net amount you actually receive.
Got it. So it's not just about the face value, but the net proceeds after those costs.
You're a quick learner.
I try. All right, I think we've conquered IFRS 9 for now.
I think so too. Ready to move on to something a bit different.
Yeah, let's switch gears. What's next?
How about financial statement analysis and interpretation?
The part where we get to be financial detectives.
Exactly. It's all about drawing insights from those numbers.
Telling the story behind the financials.
Precisely. And the examiner reports highlight some common pitfalls here.
Like what?
Well, one of the biggest mistakes is not addressing the specific requirements.
So you can't just give a generic answer?
Nope. The examiners want to see that you understand the specific case study.
And can apply your knowledge to that particular situation.
Exactly. Another common error is not fully utilizing the information provided.
Meaning
those case studies are packed with clues.
And you need to use those clues to support your analysis.
Precisely. Don't just regurgitate textbook definitions.
Show that you can connect the dots and draw meaningful conclusions.
Exactly. Another thing to avoid is making generic statements.
Okay, give us an example.
Well, a student might say, an increase in current ratio usually indicates improved liquidity.
Which is true, right?
It is, but it's not enough. You need to explain how that relates to the specific company.
And its industry, its operating cycle, all that good stuff.
Exactly. Give context, provide insights, go beyond the textbook.
So it's not just about knowing the ratios, but about interpreting them.
Precisely. Analysis and interpretation. That's the key.
Okay, got it. What else should we be mindful of when it comes to analysis?
Structure. A lot of students just kind of throw their thoughts on the page.
Without a clear flow or organization.
Exactly. Remember, you're showcasing your understanding to the examiners.
So presentation matters.
Absolutely. A well-structured analysis shows clear thinking and a mastery of the material.
Okay, structure is key. Now let's talk about consolidated financial statements.
Ah, yes. The fun of combining the financials of a parent company and its subsidiary.
The joys of group accounting.
Exactly. And the Paisley Co. case in Section C provides some good examples of where students tend to struggle.
What are some of those common stumbling blocks?
Well, one of the most frequent mistakes is incorrectly adjusting the subsidiary's figures.
Like trying to time apportion those balances.
Yep. Or multiplying them by the group's ownership percentage.
Which is a big no-no.
A huge no-no. Remember, consolidation is about presenting a single set of financials for the entire group.
As if they were one economic entity.
Exactly. And another common error is mishandling those specific adjustments.
Like fair value depreciation, intergroup balances, cash in transit.
All of those. They can be tricky if you don't have a solid grasp of the consolidation principles.
So it's not just about knowing the basic steps, but understanding the nuances.
Precisely. Consolidation is a complex area, but it's also a crucial one.
Especially for anyone working in a group environment.
Absolutely. Now, before we wrap up our deep dive, let's take a moment to reflect on everything we've covered.
So we've covered leases, revenue, business combinations, inventory, even IFRS 9.
We've hit some of the biggest trouble spots, right?
Yeah, those areas where the examiner reports say, watch out.
But remember, it's not about scaring you, it's about empowering you.
Right. Knowing where others have tripped means you can step carefully.
Exactly. You've got this insider knowledge now, this roadmap to success.
Okay. So I feel like we've definitely laid a good foundation here.
Definitely. And as you dive deeper into your studies,
yeah,
keep in mind, it's not just about memorizing rules.
Right. It's about understanding the why behind them.
Exactly. Those financial statements, they tell a story.
And you're the one interpreting that story.
You're the detective looking for clues.
Piecing together the puzzle.
Exactly. So as you go through those practice questions, don't just focus on the calculations.
Think about what those numbers are telling you.
About the company's performance, its financial health.
Its future prospects.
Exactly. That's what the examiners are looking for.
That deeper understanding, that ability to analyze and interpret.
And those skills will serve you well beyond the exam.
Throughout your entire career.
Absolutely. So to all those future accountants out there,
Yeah, to everyone gearing up for the ACCA FR exam.
We believe in you. You've got this.
Go out there and crush it.